Happy New Year! It's 2024. It's 2024, and from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is the People Pleaser Show. We're back at it. I didn't do one over the holidays because it was the holidays, and I was in Utah with my family, and I was just trying to be present with them. I was trying to be present with the presents. Okay, if that's all right with everybody, if everyone's okay with that, I took a week off, and I should have probably gotten this in before the new year actually began. I probably should have gotten this in, but who the hell actually cares is the real question. Who cares? Here we are. We're gonna do a best and worst of 2023, and let me just say at the top of the show here that this is going to be just a very subjective list. This is literally just going to be best and worst according to me and no one else. I am not consulting any other aggregators or interlocutors or commentators for this list. This is just best and worst according to your pal Austin, who is rocking a tuxedo for you. For those of you who are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you're missing out on how handsome your boy looks right now. Okay, everything's backwards in the camera, so I tried to straighten my tie and I made it more crooked. But I'm looking so smooth. I'm looking so fresh and so clean. I'm looking so ready to seize the day, every day of 2024. I got a little pocket square going on. It keeps falling down, even though I taped it up in there. I don't think that's what you're supposed to do with a pocket square, but I taped it so it would stay, and it's still falling down. I don't care, though. I'm cruising. I'm smooth. I'm having a great time. There's so much stuff that I need to talk about on my best and worst list, so we just need to go, okay? That's it. No more fooling around. We're getting into the show. Very, very subjective list, best and worsts of 2023. No apologies for my opinions, for my takes. This is just according to my personal, individual lived experience of this year. Starting out, best haircut of 2023, it's the one I have right now, okay? My sister-in-law, Lissandra, who's been on this show twice, she's been a guest on this podcast twice, she cuts hair, and sometimes when I'm in Utah, she'll cut my hair, and nobody shapes my hair better than Lissandra. Like, she understands, she always gets exactly what it is that I want. When I just go to, like, a barber, and I try to show them a picture of, like, can you make my hair like this again, they just always just wind up, like, cutting it shorter and putting a little texture in, which is fine, but I really want them to, like, get in there and make a sculpture out of my hair. I've got this long, thick, nice hair, and I'm like, get in there and play. Make a little art piece out of my head, and they don't want to do that. Lissandra always wants to do that. She always wants to, like, she wants to take the vision and be like, watch, I'm gonna show you, and I'm gonna craft it. And she always crafts something for me where, like, all I gotta do is wake up and just sort of push my fingers through it, and it just sits so nice. It's a little messy today, but even messy, it's just got a really nice shape. And she got it in there, like, on, I got this haircut on, like, the 27th or the 28th. So she got it in there right under the wire to be the best haircut of 2023. And I think the second best haircut is a haircut that she gave me in, like, July. So two best haircuts were from my sister-in-law, Lissandra. Shout out, Lissandra. Thank you for the two best haircuts of 2023. Worst haircut of 2023. I tried to recall, and I honestly couldn't, but it was probably a haircut, no shade, it was probably a haircut that I got at Floyd's Barbershop, which is where I go in LA to get my haircut. I should just find a new place to get my haircut, but I'm nervous. I'm nervous that the new place I find will be even worse than the place I go to now. Floyd's is not bad. It's not a bad barbershop. It's just that it's like, they just don't care as much as I want them to care. I go in there and I try to give them, like, really, really detailed instructions on what I want them to do, and they just wind up doing something very generic every time. And I always leave a little underwhelmed, a little like, I think you guys could have done more. And usually it takes, like, a couple weeks for it to grow out and sort of settle before it starts looking okay again. And I want to leave that barbershop feeling like that's my best. The day of should be my best. And the day that I got my hair cut by Lissandra, that day, there were people being like, your hair looks amazing. And I was like, that's goddamn right. That's how it should be right after I get a haircut. It should be those first few days, people should be like noticing how fresh the cut is. But usually when I go to Floyd's, I leave and it takes several days before it looks good again. Okay, so that's haircut. Moving on. Life experiences. Best and worst life experiences of 2023. Of course, this is going to be so subjective because this is my life we're talking about here. This isn't your life. This is my life. So this is in lieu of like an Instagram post or a reel of some sort or a TikTok video of like highlights of different things I did this year. I figured I would just rattle them all off in the podcast. I did a lot this year that I'm really proud of. I did a lot that I'm really excited about. And then I'm really happy with. I started off the year in 2023 in January, started off strong by making a music video with my friend Tiffany Topol called Teenage Feeling for her song Teenage Feeling. I directed it and came up with the story with Tiffany, and we shot that in January of 2023. And I've directed a lot of music videos, and that's my favorite. And I felt like we nailed it on that one. Had an amazing creative team. Boston McConaughey, who directed Alien Country, which is a movie that I'm in. He helped me out on that. He was my AD. Wes Johnson, who was our director of photography for Alien Country. He came in and shot Teenage Feeling. Executed all of my ideas brilliantly. I was so happy with how that whole thing came together. If you have not watched Teenage Feeling by Tiffany Topol yet, get onto YouTube and type in Teenage Feeling, Tiffany Topol. You will not be disappointed. It's a homage to music videos from the late 90s, early 2000s, and there are so many references to music videos from that era in this music video, and I feel like we really nailed it. And it was a great way to start the year. A huge artistic success and creative success and collaboration with a person who I am really happy to be friends with, who I really admire, Tiffany Topol, really good artist. Then following up after that, the filming of H2, Horizon Part 2, coming to a theater near you, summer of 2024, June 26th and August 16th from Warner Brothers and New Line Cinema. A two-part cinematic theatrical event, Kevin Costner's Horizon Part 1 and Part 2, will be in theaters this summer. And in spring and early summer of 2023, I shot Horizon Part 2. Shot Horizon 1 in 2022 and shot Part 2 in 2023. If you've listened to this podcast, if you've been here with us, if you've been on the journey, you know all about my horse riding cowboy journey with these movies. That on movie one, I constantly thought I was going to get fired because I couldn't ride horses, and I felt like a fraud every single day. I was the least famous person in every scene that I was in, and I constantly felt like they were going to be like, "Why is this guy here? Not only is he not as famous as anyone else on this set, but also he can't even ride horses. Get him out of here." But I was determined to figure out how to ride horses better in 2023, and I did that. I hired a private riding coach in LA, figured out how to ride pretty competently. I'd say I went from like a negative 2 on a 0 to 10 scale to like a 5 maybe. Maybe I'm like a 4 or a 5 now, which is a big improvement. And I was so noticeably improved at riding that people talked about it all the time. People on the movie set, all of our wranglers, these wranglers who in the first movie kept coming up to me and telling me how obvious it was that I didn't know what I was doing. So these men are not like, these are not men that hand out compliments for free. These are men that the entire time we were shooting the first movie kept coming up to me and being like, "Have you never ridden a horse before?" And I was like, "I've ridden like 2 or 3 times." And they were like, "Yeah, it looks like it. It looks like you don't know what you're doing." And they were just like, "So be careful and just sort of like stay next to me and I'll whisper in your ear and tell you what to do and just try not to die." And then on the second movie, those same men kept coming up to me and being like, I was just riding across the field and I saw you and I was like, there's no way that's Austin. And then I got closer to you and I was like, holy shit, that's Austin. And so these men who were letting me know how bad I was kept letting me know every day how improved I was and how impressed they were with how much better my riding was. So it was a really cool, that was one of my favorite things of 2023. And it all culminated with the boss. On our last day of shooting, he was doing a rap speech, and this is in front of our entire cast and crew. He's talking about all the people in our cast. He's talking about, you know, Will Patton and Luke Wilson and all these amazing actors and how great of work they did. And then he goes, where's Austin Archer? And he pulls me up in front of our entire crew and all of our background and our cast, and he goes, I didn't know who this guy was before we started shooting the first movie, and I saw his audition tape. And I was like, he's a good actor. Let's see if he can ride horses. Well, he came to the movie set and he could not ride horses at all. He sucked at it and everyone laughed and I laughed. And then he goes, but he came up to me at the end of the first movie and he said, I promise you I'm going to get better at this before we start shooting the second movie. And you know what? He did. He fucking did. And that made it all worth it. That was one of the best moments of my 2023 was Kevin Costner in front of our entire cast and crew. Saying that I fulfilled my promise to him and that I got better at writing and that I did what I said I was going to do. So yeah, that was really, really cool. Filming H2 was really, really cool. I felt like the whole cast and crew got a lot closer on the second film. And now we get to have a couple movie premieres this year and see how our work translates onto the screen and see how everyone likes it. Speaking of movies that will be coming out in 2024, I'm also in a movie that will be coming out in March of 2024 in theaters called Riddle of Fire. Really just bizarre, lovely, weird little movie that I think people are going to love. I think people are going to be obsessed with how unique and bizarre and funny this movie is. And I got to go to Toronto and attend the Toronto International Film Festival and watch this movie. And what an experience that was. I didn't really get to talk about it publicly at the time because the actor strike was going on. But I got to just go to Toronto and watch a bunch of great movies, including a movie that I'm in. And I got to, like, be part of the pre-show and post-show speech, like before the, if you've ever been to a big film festival like Sundance or something like that, sometimes they have the director or cast and crew come up and do an introduction before the film and maybe a talk back after the film. And our director, Weston Rizzulli, was doing an introduction before the film, and he told me before we went up before we were at dinner beforehand, and he said, I got to give a speech before we watch the movie, and I want you to come out and do an interpretive dance for everyone on stage. He said, would you do that? And I said, absolutely. And so I went out on stage in front of 1,000 people in Toronto, and I just did improvised, very weird dance, which is very appropriate for our film. Our film is very weird, and Weston is a very bizarre, weird artist, and it was a very... And I watched a lot of movies in the 10 days that I was in Toronto, and none of them did that. None of them had someone come out and do an interpretive dance before the film to introduce the film. But that is very correct for our film. And it was a really cool experience. I really loved Toronto. I saw a bunch of good films. I met cool people in Toronto. Had a great time. That was definitely like a top 10 life experience. Moving down the list of best life experiences, science fiction. I wanted to do a play this year, especially because somebody said, is there an H1 and what is it? Yes, there is. So if you're just getting here, I already explained what H1 is. You can listen to the podcast back if you'd like. There's will be an audio version and a version on YouTube that you can listen to. Science fiction. I wanted to do a play this year because actors were on strike. There wasn't a lot of film work going on. It was a great opportunity to get back on stage and try some stuff out. And I also wanted to do a play that was going to be very challenging emotionally and creatively. I wanted to find a piece that was going to really like push me and stretch me. And I got an offer to do a production of Oleana by David Mamet in Salt Lake City that I heavily considered just because the text is so difficult. If you've never read Oleana or seen a production of it, it's like on the page, it looks like it's going to be like the hardest. If you're an actor, you read it and you go, oh, this, I mean, it's just nothing but people interrupting each other and talking over each other the entire time. And I read that and I thought that looks really, really interesting, really, really difficult. But the production was going to take place at the same time that I was supposed to be in Toronto for the film festival. So I opted to do the film festival instead because I just wanted to go to the film festival. I wanted to take myself on a trip and have a nice time. And luckily, right around the time that I was in Toronto, my friend Whit Hertford, who's a playwright and director, his lead actor had to drop out of this play that he was doing, and he called me and he was devastated and he didn't know how they were going to pull it off in the timeline that he wanted to pull it off in. And I said, why don't you send me the script and let me take a look at it if you're okay with that? And he said, oh, I'd love if you would take a look at it. Sent me the script. I read it in my Airbnb in Toronto, and there's this monologue in the middle of the script. Again, very difficult script. From the beginning, I'm reading it going, okay, this is going to be very challenging. But there's this monologue in the middle of the play where my character tells this story about Harry Houdini and this one particularly difficult escape that he was attempting that was very hard for him. And his wife came out on stage and gave him a kiss and slipped him the key in her mouth and helped him with the escape and didn't get any credit for it. And it's this metaphor for the way that I feel about my wife. And it was this really, really beautiful monologue that I read that and I said, if I can say that, then I want to do this play. Even though the play had all kinds of things that scared the shit out of me in it. It had, you know, really vulnerable intimacy between me and the other actor where we would have to be potentially disrobed in front of the audience and very, very, you know, naked and raw, literally and figuratively, with each other, kissing and making out and feeling each other's bodies while audience members are 3 and 5 feet away. It had a scene where I fully masturbate on stage in front of the audience. It had has violence and moments where I have to scream my lungs out. It has, you know, moments that require me to be incredibly emotional and cry a lot. And it also has a lot of humor and required that I could also be funny and find that balance and find those colors. So it had kind of everything that an actor wants to play with in the sandbox of theater. And that was a really, really great experience. It was really fucking hard. And Tori and I, my co-star in that play, it just about killed us. And on closing night after our final performance, we sort of collapsed into each other's arms and she just kind of cried her eyes out and said, we don't have to do it anymore. We're done. We don't have to do it anymore. And I said, yeah, we're done. We did it. It just about killed us, but we did it. And that was a great life experience. Very challenging, but very worthwhile. One of my other favorite things that happened in 2023, it really began in 2022, but I feel like in 2023, we really found hit our stride and became a cohesive unit. And this was in the world of content creation, that aspect of what I do, that aspect of my life, making content. There was a lot of disappointment this year, a lot of I felt like my channels kind of died across the board on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube in many ways. And I felt like my momentum kind of hit a wall. But one area that was very successful that I was really proud of all year long and really excited I'm really excited about continuing into 2023 is my collaboration with Carolyn Dunton and Colin Stanley, aka Little Victorian Boy. If you've seen them, you know what I'm talking about. It's these sketches that I'm making with my friends. We probably release, you know, one or two of these a week with the three of us. And I believe we started doing these in 2022, but we really hit our stride creatively, I feel like, in 2023. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we really started this year. It feels like it was all this year. But when I go back, like Kara and Colin and I have definitely been hanging out for longer than a year. But yeah, that was probably the most successful thing that I was doing in the space of content creation. And it was nice to be a part of something that just existed with the only goal of just making people laugh. A lot of times on my channel, I really try to be socially conscious and talk about things that I think are important and give my socio-political commentary on the goings-on in the world and try to be tapped into the good, the bad, and the ugly of the human experience. And sometimes that can be really exhausting, and sometimes that can be really, really difficult. And I also am a person who just likes to entertain. I just like to just make stuff that makes people smile and makes people laugh. And with Kara and Colin, that's basically all we're doing, is just the only goal is to make something funny, is to make something unique and interesting and you know, worth spending 2 minutes of your time on in your day. And I love those two very much, and am very grateful for their friendship and that collaboration. I've always wanted to be a part of something like this, and I'm very happy about it. Another life experience that I'm happy about in the realm of content creation, even though this didn't really take off the way that I wanted it to, I started making video essays on YouTube. I started making YouTube exclusive content. If you know, you know. If you've watched any of my video essays, you know that jingle. It's at the beginning of all the videos. It goes, YouTube exclusive content. It's my YouTube exclusive content. And sometimes it's 20 minutes long, and sometimes it's 35 minutes long, and sometimes it's an hour and a half. And you just don't know what you're going to get. It's a lot more labor intensive than just making a TikTok or an Instagram Reels or even a podcast. This podcast, I sit down and I speak off the top of the dome with notes for like an hour, hour and a half. And the YouTube exclusive content, I have to write a whole fucking script, and then I have to edit a whole hour-long video, and it takes me like 2 to 3 weeks to make one of those things. It's a real labor of love, especially since not that many people watch them. You know, my average views on those are between like 10 and 20,000 views, which to me is worth it starting out, but I'm just glad that I started. I'm glad that I had that goal. I wanted to start making YouTube exclusive content. I wanted to start making long form video essays, and I did it. I made about 20 of them in 2023. I hope to continue that project in 2024. Another best life experience was the strike. I went back and forth about whether or not to put this in the best or the worst category. I wound up putting it in both. As far as life experiences go, what I like about the strike, as far as putting it in the best category, is it is nice to see people in the working class be reminded of their power, be reminded that we do have collective power, that we can come together and negotiate for better rights in the workplace if we have the guts to stick together and to stand behind each other. Strikes used to be so much more prevalent and so much more common than they are today. It used to be that like hundreds of strikes would happen every year in all these different labor unions. And now it's like every year there's usually like less than one. Like strikes happen like a couple times every few years. It's very, very rare for labor unions to go on strike these days, and I think that that's a shame. I was proud of the way that the WGA and the SAG-AFTRA, that the workers in those unions stuck together with each other and voted in solidarity for those to authorize those strikes, and showed up on the picket lines and really went out to advocate for themselves and for each other. And I was proud of what that signaled to the larger working world, that like to remind people that this is an option that we have as working people, and this is an option that we should be taking advantage of more frequently. Now that's my long list of best life experiences, and that leads me into worst life experiences of 2023. And the reason why I put the strike in there as well, in worst life experiences of 2023, is after all of the solidarity, after all of the stick-to-itiveness that my fellow union members showed on the picket lines, I have to admit, pretty disappointed with the way our negotiating committee crossed the finish line. They did it in a way that I felt sort of undercut a lot of the work that we had done in the months that the strike took place. They sort of rushed it through. I felt like they let the AMPTP bully them into making a rushed final decision, and they sort of announced the decision as being final without consulting the membership. It was in the press as the actor's strike is over before before we even had emails as actors informing us that a temporary tentative deal had been reached. We didn't even get an opportunity to look at the deal and talk about it before it was in the news that our strike was over. And it felt like our negotiating committee sort of went over our heads and undercut a lot of the hard work that we had done. And I felt that they... Now, I want to be clear about this too, that I do feel like a lot was accomplished in our strike. A lot was accomplished. It was not a loss. We did not lose. We definitely gained a lot from the strike. But I did feel that at the end, we compromised on more than we needed to. I think that we let the AMPTP scare us. They used this language in their final offer where they said, this is our final and best offer. And it was sort of this threatening language of like, this is all you're going to get. This is the last thing we're going to offer you. And if you don't accept this, then it's all over. That's it. But the reality of a strike like that is the AMPTP doesn't get to make that decision. They don't get to determine when the last offer has been made. Because we, as the workers who make their money, who make their product, can just say, no, we will just continue to be on the picket line and not work for you. And if we're not working, and if our sister unions continue to stand in solidarity with us and continue to hold the line, they don't have a product, and all of those companies would just go under. They would just cease to exist. Massive studios, massive companies like Warner and Netflix and Disney would just, their media arms would just go under. And like, they don't really have anything to negotiate with. We don't necessarily want to see those companies completely implode and for the industry to have to be rebuilt from the ground up, but we will do that. They like, we're the people as artists who are used to having to work with very little and having to work from the ground up and having to use creativity to our advantage to figure out how to do a lot with a little. If the film industry as we know it today were to collapse and all of the major big studios were to go under and, you know, run out of money, the artists would continue to make films. The artists would just say, cool, we no longer need the permission of the big studios to do what we want to do. We can go out and make a good movie for a few hundred thousand dollars that we can raise independently with independent financiers. And we don't have to go through the hoops of, you know, a big studio system. And all of the approvals that we need and all the red tape that exists in that system. So I felt like it was a little bit disappointing after all of that work, after all of that solidarity, to compromise at the very end as though the AMPTP held any cards or had any real leverage in the situation, instead of just saying, no, these are our terms and you will either agree to them or you will go away. Your business will go under. And that sounds brutal, but that's sort of the situation. That being said, we did get a lot. We have a better contract today than we did before the strike started, and that's a win. That's something. So continuing with worst life experiences of 2023, as good as science fiction was, the play that I did with Wit and Tori, as good of an experience as that was as an actor, as much as that stretched me, I also just had an experience with that show that I've talked about on this podcast before, so I'll briefly recap it. One of the nights of that performance, I had not taking care of myself that day. I didn't eat any food and I wound up drinking an energy drink on my way to the show, and I didn't take my meds with me that I had been taking to kind of keep my emotions in check and my anxiety in check during the run of the show. And I wound up having a massive earth-shattering panic attack about 30 minutes before the show started, and I couldn't recover and regain my footing before the show began, and we had to cancel the performance. And I've never had to cancel a performance before for anything due to my anxiety. I have anxiety whenever I perform. I've had panic attacks while performing before, but I've never had to cancel, and we did have to cancel a performance, and that was new. That was a new experience with my panic disorder was, not being able to push through and do what I needed to do. That sucked. Another worst life experience of 2023. Again, this is another thing that I did a whole episode on. The episode that I did about this preceded like a 2-month break where this podcast didn't exist for a couple months, and I didn't know if it was going to come back. And this was the passing of our friend Joe McClinsky. Did an episode with my cousin David Allred about this called Obsession. And this is Von Vitti, the content creator and musician. Maybe some of you followed him on TikTok or Instagram. Von Vitti died of suicide this year, and it really rocked my world. I was a big fan of Von Vitti, and I saw him as a peer and as someone that I related to a lot. We did a lot of the same things, and we saw the world in similar ways. We had similar senses of humor, and we were both these like indie musicians who were also like writing, recording, and producing all of our own music and doing all of the own instrumentation for all of our own music, and sort of these relentless creatives. But he had a creative output that far surpassed my own. I feel like my creative output is at times too much and obsessive and over the top, and I need to pull back and take more time to just be a person in the world. And Joe McClinsky had a creative output that was 10 times what mine is. And I saw with Joe and with his death, I saw myself in that and sort of a mirror of myself. And I realized I've got to be careful about how I approach what I do. And I've got to make sure that it really kind of stopped me in my tracks and hit me hard. And I did an episode about it on the podcast, and then I went away for a while. And my content, honestly, hasn't really been the same since. I haven't really had the same obsessive drive to be creating new videos every single day and to be making new podcasts every single week and to be making new music all the time that I had before Joe died. And I think that's a good thing. I think that I needed to slow down, and I needed to reevaluate my relationship to this and my relationship to the audience. But yeah, I wish Joe was still alive. He was a really great artist, and his death affected me a lot. The top worst thing that happened in 2023, worst life experience, even though it's not really my life experience, is, and this shouldn't be any surprise, 20,000 plus dead in Gaza over the last few months in the wake of the October 7th attack from Hamas to Israel. Israel's massively disproportionate response. You know, this is nothing new in the world. When a world power that has a really powerful, well-funded, well-organized, and recognized military is attacked by a inferior military presence or inferior in power, not inferior in worth, or, you know, just a presence in the world with less power, less institutional power, let's say. It's not uncommon for the response from the more powerful country or entity to be massively disproportionate, and that's what we've been witnessing, is a massively disproportionate response, a humanitarian crisis, a genocide, an ethnic cleansing, and it's been horrific to just watch it unfold and feel so helpless and feel so terrified. And on top of that, it's been sort of horrific to experience it just as a person on the internet, as a person who makes his living on the internet. It's been one of the most difficult things I've had to navigate, and that's, I don't want to center myself or my discomfort or pain or fear, because my pain and discomfort and fear pales in comparison to the pain and discomfort and fear of anyone living in Gaza right now. I have nothing on that experience, but if we are talking about my experience of 2023 and what my best and worst life experiences were this year, when it comes to just what I immediately experienced, my immediate experience of this was that I've never seen something that has made my audience and my friends quite so unreasonably ugly to each other. It's been really, really hard. I understand. I get that what we're all witnessing has the power to bring out that ugliness, has the power to bring out a vitriol, because we are so upset by what we're seeing. We feel so helpless, so afraid, so maddeningly frustrated. It has the power to bring out an anger, but it has been, in my estimation, in my view, I don't believe that it's useful or helpful to anyone in Gaza. How harsh we are to each other about this, and how cruel we've been to each other about this. But yeah, it's definitely brought out. I see people in my political side of the camp so drastically divided right now. It's not just the left and the right who are ideologically divided over, you know, all of the normal things that we're divided on. It's the left that is having a really hard time getting on board with what the messaging should be, with what the approach should be, with it's been very taxing and difficult to navigate and witness. I try my best to be really clear about my advocacy for the Palestinian people and for Arab people, and to be really clear about my feeling that what's happening in Gaza is an absolute humanitarian crisis, and my desire for the international community to put pressure on Israel to stop doing what it's doing. I want to be really clear about that, but even then, it's like, anytime I talk about this, people who are really, really dug in on both sides of this are really mad at me about some aspect of my language being inadequate for them, insufficient for them. And it is I don't find myself in this position often, where like people who I typically agree with, people who are typically on my team, you know, whether they are very pro-Israel or whether they are very, very pro-Palestine, they both seem to find aspects of my language around this to be inadequate or insufficient, and I don't really know how to, and I don't feel like I'm in the middle. I don't feel like a centrist in this. I feel like I've made it very clear in everything that I've said what my position is, and that I do have a position. And I've also said very clearly that I don't think anyone should care about my position. I don't think that my position should be something that should matter in the international discussion about this topic. But yeah, that has been a global bummer, just a real big bummer to end the year on. And my top pick for worst life experience. Okay, that's the that's probably the heavy stuff of the podcast. That's probably the heaviest we're gonna get, is like Von Vitti's death and the genocide and humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Let's change gears here. Let's see if I can navigate this transition. Best and worst movies of 2023. Maybe I should have changed the order of this list around, and I should have done all the light stuff at the first half. But maybe, I don't know, maybe it's better. We get the heavy stuff out of the way there in the middle of the show, and now we're going to movies. I had a friend text me the other day, and he said, is there some kind of list I can find for an Austin Archer best of movies and music and stuff? And I was like, not yet, but I'll make one. And here we are. I'll try my best to keep this brief, because God, we're 40 minutes into the show and I've still got a lot to talk about. Okay, best movies. Best movie of 2023 for my money is Past Lives. There's a lot of best movie lists going around right now on YouTube, and a lot of movie critics that I like and respect, and anyone that doesn't have Past Lives on their list, I instantly am like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Either you didn't see it, or if you did see it and it's not on your list, you're wrong. So like, I'm a big fan of Chris Stuckman. Chris Stuckman and I agree most of the time on his reviews. Usually when I see a movie, I'll go in, and I do this, I'll go and watch Chris Stuckman's review after I've already seen the movie to see how closely mine and Chris's feelings about the movie line up. And 9 times out of 10, Chris says the exact things that I was thinking about the movie. And I'm like, yeah, me and Chris, we feel the same way. Past Lives wasn't on Chris Stuckman's list, and he did like 15 movies, I think. And it wasn't on the list, and I was like, you're just wrong, Chris Stuckman. Past Lives is the best movie that came out in 2023. It's the best. I mean, it's my friend Jeff Talbot, who is right about this. Jeff Talbot does a year-end best movies of the year list every year, and I look forward to it every year. It used to be on Facebook, and now he does it as an email. He sends it out as like an email newsletter to all of his friends, and he's such a good writer, and he writes these little blurbs about each movie. And Jeff Talbot's number one movie correctly was Past Lives, and in Jeff Talbot's review of Past Lives, he called it a miracle of a film. He said Celine Song, I mean, and I agree. He said it might be just a miracle of a movie because it's Celine Song's directorial debut in film. It's her first, she wrote it and directed it, and it's the first movie she's ever made. And it's like, it's perfect. It's so expertly crafted and directed. It's goddamn near perfect. And the movie does so many things that are so rare and so, I mean, it's somehow an American film that's mostly in Korean, but it's an American story, but it's also a Korean story. It's not a foreign movie, but it is. It's an immigrant story. Like, America, immigrant stories are American stories, and that this movie does that so well to be like, just because this is an immigrant story doesn't mean this isn't an American story. Most of the film takes place in America and is about a very American experience of immigration. It just happens to be in a language that is not English most of the film, but there are so many languages spoken in this country by so many people, and from all over the place. And this movie is just, it's just a gorgeous movie. It's so simple in how relatable it is, what it's about. It's just something that everyone can relate to. Everyone knows this, the very simple thing that Celine, and it's just something Celine Song experienced. She just had an old fling come and visit, and she had this idea of like, oh, there's a whole other life I could have had with this person if I had made a few different decisions in my life. Very simple concept and brilliantly executed. If it doesn't win all the awards, I will riot. My second favorite movie of the year, Poor Things by Yorgos Lanthimos. This was the most surprising pick for me of the year because I am typically not a Yorgos Lanthimos fan. I respect Yorgos Lanthimos. I respect the craft of Yorgos Lanthimos. I always see that Yorgos Lanthimos is talented, but the movies don't really connect with me in the way that I want them to connect. Past Lives blew me away. Past Lives did blow me away, but Poor Things blew me the fuck away. Emma Stone is incredible, is somehow pulling off, Emma Stone and Yorgos Lanthimos together are somehow pulling off a film that in 2023, really, it should be causing a lot of controversy. People should be freaking out about how controversial the subject matter of this movie is, but it's handled so right, in my opinion, that it all just winds up working. And Emma Stone endows Bella Baxter with such agency and dimensionality that all of the things that happen to her that are so not okay, even though they're not okay, you trust Bella to handle it and to take care of the experience. And on top of what a remarkable movie and how unique and how amazing the balancing of such a difficult story is, it's just one of the most beautiful films of the year, production design-wise, cinematography-wise, absolutely gorgeous, loved Poor Things. The Iron Claw, the rest of these movies are in no particular order. My top two movies are Past Lives and Poor Things. The rest of these are in no particular order. The Iron Claw is one of the most tragic stories I've ever heard. I honestly sat in the theater and I couldn't believe what I was watching. I deliberately did not look up anything about the Von Erich brothers before watching this movie. I just sort of wanted to take in the story as I watched the film. And I'm not sure if that's a good decision or a bad decision. It's all out there. You can, if you want, before you go see this film, if you haven't seen it yet, you can like go onto YouTube and type in the Von Erich brothers or the Von Erich family. There's a good, Vice did a really good, like 44-minute documentary called the Curse of the Von Erichs. It tells you exactly what happened. It's a story that is truly stranger than fiction. And the real life story is actually more tragic than the story that's in the movie. It's even sadder than what is on screen. But I was really impressed with all of the actors and what they had, the physicality that they brought to their roles and what they had to do. And the story is just, kind of insane. Dream Scenario with Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage, there's a community episode where Abed takes a class called Nicolas Cage Good or Bad, and it's like a philosophy of film class where the whole point of the class is to determine whether or not Nicolas Cage is a good actor. And it's a funny joke, and they go back and forth on like, is Nicolas Cage good or is he terrible? Is he actually brilliant or is he just insane and making crazy choices and that's why people like him? I've always been in the camp that Nicolas Cage is one of the best living actors that we have. He's got one of the most amazing filmographies of any living actor today, like of any actor in the history of cinema, really. You hold him up against anyone and what he's done over his career and the range of characters that he's played and the places that he's been willing to go as an actor, and I think that he doesn't get enough credit as a true, genuine character actor. He really imbues every character that he plays with like unique characteristics and tics and idiosyncrasies, and that's nowhere better on display than in Dream Scenario. The character that he creates in this movie is so specific and odd and idiosyncratic, and it's such a real guy that you're just like, that it doesn't even feel like it's Nicolas Cage. It's such subtle and brilliant character work. I think it's some of the best he's ever done. It's certainly one of the best he's done since Adaptation, which is also one of his best performances ever, with Charlie Kaufman. And this is a very Charlie Kaufman-esque movie. The first time I saw it, it didn't quite land with me as well as I wanted it to. I liked it so much more the second time, particularly because of Nicolas Cage's performance, but also I just think that it's a really unique, interesting screenplay that has a lot to say about fame and parasocial relationships. And Dream Scenario, fantastic. A24 continues to crush it. A24 is just like everybody else, what are you doing? Everybody else, what do you look at all of the top movies I've already said? Past Lives, Poor Things, Iron Claw, Dream Scenario, all A24 films. And like, is anybody else in the film industry going to be interested in producing good films anytime soon? Or is it all going to be from A24? Is it just all A24 from here on out? They're the only ones that are interested in telling original stories and stories that'll blow your hair back? I don't know. Priscilla is the next on my list. And guess who produced it and released it? A24, baby. But it's the best Sofia Coppola film I've seen probably since Lost in Translation. I really like Sofia Coppola. I find her other, you know, I think that Marie Antoinette and The Bling Ring have things about them that are really interesting, but Priscilla is the best, the most complete, the most cohesive vision that I've seen from her since Lost in Translation. Fantastic film. For me, for my money, it blows Elvis, the Baz Luhrmann movie Elvis, right out of the water. I think it's a much better depiction of the real life character of Elvis and Priscilla. And Jacob Elordi, what a year he had. Jacob Elordi really showed us this year that he's not just the hot guy from Euphoria. He's a genuine force to be reckoned with as an actor, because between playing Elvis and Priscilla and the role that he had in Saltburn, the guy's legit. The guy's here. The guy is here to play. He's hot as shit, and he's here to play. He actually can do the thing. He's got the chops. So watch out for Jacob Elordi. I think in 2024, the whole film industry went, oh shit, that guy's here to play. So watch out. Talk to Me. Guess who? Guess who produced Talk to Me? I'll give you one guess, because you don't need to guess any other guesses. It's A24. And it was the best horror movie thriller of the year by far. Fantastic. Really cool story of how it came to be. The fact that they gave these YouTubers a shot to make a movie. Again, A24 is giving new directors like Celine Song and these people who made Talk to Me, giving them a shot to do something that other production companies wouldn't give them a shot to do. And it keeps paying off. A24 let the Daniels make the multiverse movie that no one else would let them make. The Daniels wanted to make this multiverse movie with several other bigger studios, and no one would make let them make it their way, and A24 let them do it their way, and they just won all of the awards because Everything Everywhere All at Once was one of the best movies ever made. And yeah, Talk to Me was fantastic, and A24 continues to be knocking several different genres out of the water, whether it's like a simple drama like Past Lives, whether it's a historical biopic like Priscilla, whether it's a weird, heady, you know, the philosophical movie like Dream Scenario, or whether it's a horror movie like Talk to Me, A24 is knocking it out of the park. Or a fucking sports entertainment drama like The Iron Claw. Two more movies on the list, and then we'll move on to worst movies of the year. This next movie I'm going to say could potentially be in like, if I was going to make a top three, this would maybe be... This could also be like right up there tied with Past Lives for my favorite movie of the year, because my experience of it was so earth-shatteringly emotional. I cried the entire movie. I started crying like 15 minutes into this movie, and I cried the rest of the movie. And I had such a just, you know, kind of life-changing experience in the theater. And I saw, this is a movie I saw at TIFF. And the reason why it's not higher on my list is it hasn't had a theatrical release yet, and I don't know if it will have a wide theatrical release until 2024. It should, though. If this movie winds up just getting kicked to streamers, I'm gonna be so upset, because I want this to have a wide theatrical release. And the movie is Sing Sing, and it's a drama about Sing Sing Penitentiary in New York, where they have a program for rehabilitating inmates, where they put on theater with, they put on theatrical productions with the inmates there. And they've been doing this since like 2005. It's a true story. And the amazing thing about this film is it's a narrative. It's not a documentary. It's a narrative. And all of the actors in the film, all the characters are played by the actual men who started this program in 2005 in Sing Sing Penitentiary. These are all men who were incarcerated in Sing Sing Penitentiary and have since been released and gone back to their lives and been rehabilitated. And they all are playing themselves in this film, and they all give just such heartbreaking, human, amazing, triumphant performances. And the most amazing performance of the movie comes from Clarence Macklin, Clarence Divine Eye Macklin, who plays himself in the film. And this man, it's his debut. He's never been in a movie before in his life. He's acting alongside Colman Domingo, who's also giving just one of the best performances of his career. And that's saying a lot. Colman Domingo is such an incredible actor, and his performance in Sing Sing is just amazing. I sat there this entire movie thinking, oh, okay, so everyone's playing themselves, but they hired two real actors to play the two leads. The two leads are Colman Domingo and this guy who's playing Clarence Macklin. And then the movie ends, and I was so shocked to find out that Clarence Macklin was played by Clarence Macklin and not a professional actor that they went out and hired, because he was going toe-to-toe with Colman Domingo and holding his own in this movie so well. It was such a just jaw-droppingly amazing performance. And I got to meet this guy after I watched the movie, and I shook his hand and I looked him in the eye and I said, "You're going to win a fucking Oscar for this." And he said, "You think so?" And I said, "I absolutely do think so. That's one of the best film performances I've ever seen in my life." And he said, "Thank you so much." And I said, "Thank you." And I walked away. And yeah, Sing Sing. I really hope it comes out in theaters. I think it deserves all the hype, all the awards. And then my last favorite movie of the year was The Killer by David Fincher. I'm really bummed out that this movie only did a limited run in theaters and then just sort of wound up on Netflix. I feel like a David Fincher movie should have been a bigger deal. A David Fincher movie like this, especially, where it's like a total throwback to vintage David Fincher. It's David Fincher doing what David Fincher does, which is like dark, gritty, atmospheric thrillers with style oozing out of it, their pores at, you know, in every crease and crevice. And this really is like peak Fincher, and I was so happy that it felt like a passionate, hungry young filmmaker, even after all these years that David, and you know, and David Fincher's a very well-respected, he's one of the most well-respected directors in Hollywood, and he's still making movies like this. I thought it was very strange that the movie sort of just got kicked to a streamer, but Michael Fassbender's incredible in the movie, and to me, The Killer is sort of like the realistic version of John Wick. It's very similar. It's like a hitman gets double-crossed or you know, runs afoul of the international assassin community and is now being hunted by other professional international assassins, and he has to kill his way out of the situation. Now, in John Wick, it's like 500 assassins every movie that John Wick is just dispatching by the dozens in every single scene, and it's just these crazy over-the-top action sequences. But in this movie, it's more slowly paced, and it's more like David, you know, it's more like Michael Fassbender going up against one assassin at a time in these drawn-out vignettes, in these like different little, you know, short films. And I really, really liked the movie. It felt a lot more like how this would function in the real world. It felt like it got into the psychology of the kind of person whose job is being a professional assassin. And that person is most likely kind of a psychopath. And whereas the John Wick movies, even though John Wick is just like a mass murdering serial killer, they still want you to sort of like be on John Wick's team. The Killer's like, no, this guy, you don't need to like root for this guy. He's a bad guy. He's a serial killer and a scary person, but he is the protagonist of the film that we are going to be watching and our narrator. Really, really liked that movie. Worst films of 2023. Indiana Jones. Sorry about it. If you're an Indiana Jones fan and you really liked that movie, sorry about it. I think a lot of people were like, it was better than Crystal Skull. And my response to that is, was it? Let's all be honest for a second. Was Indiana Jones 5 better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, or was it pretty much the same? Was it like, not really? To me, I'm like, no, they're both pretty bad movies. They're both pretty bad movies with like some decent sequences that have like a couple sequences that you're like, oh, this feels like a cool Indiana Jones sequence. This feels like a fun thing to see Harrison Ford back in action doing. But for the most part, they're just kind of like silly, too much CGI, lots of fan service that doesn't really land or work, and a third act ending that just goes way too over the top. Whereas with Crystal Skull, it's like the aliens thing, and it just gets, just goes, you know, the El Dorado and aliens thing. With this one, it's like, you know, the time traveling and going back and being a part of like an ancient bat. And at the same time, you sort of have to just go with it, because that's Indiana Jones, is just magical history, suspension of disbelief. But what makes Indiana Jones, at least the first three movies, really work and be classic action movies is the practical in-camera action. And the thing that I think really doesn't work for fans with 4 and 5 is all of the silly, goofy, rubbery CGI and the moving away from the practical action. There seems to be a little bit more practical action in James Mangold's movie than in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but not much. It's still a lot of CGI, and a lot of CGI that doesn't really work and takes you out of the story. Not great. You know, let's just be real about it. Indiana Jones was a movie that you saw and immediately forgot about after you saw it, and probably will never care to watch again. Continuing with the worst films of 2023, again, hate me if you must. This is my subjective list. Everything that Marvel made, everything that Marvel made in 2023, and I'm including in that the Spider-Man sequel that everyone loved. I'm sorry. Look, hey, here's who I can compliment about the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse movie and about Ant-Man Quantumania and about all the movies. It's like, people like to shit on the CGI and the rushed CGI in movies like Ant-Man Quantumania. Here's the thing is, there's just as impressive of artistry in Ant-Man Quantumania as there is in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The artists that are doing the animating are doing amazing work. They're doing incredible work that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, people would be, our minds would be melting at the kind of work that these animators are doing. But what we've been learning over the last 25 years is that impressive CGI alone does not make a good movie. Impressive animation alone does not make a good movie. We can admire the work of those animators and the fact that they're overworked and underpaid by Marvel Studios, but that doesn't mean that the movie's good. So Across the Spider-Verse is a beautiful movie to look at, but it's not a complete movie. And also, I saw it twice and I still don't really know what the fuck it's about. I still am like, what's going on? Because it's half a movie and I don't know who the bad guys are. Is Miguel a bad guy? They sure seem to be like trying to make him a bad guy, but he never really becomes a bad guy in the course of this movie. It's half a movie, so I guess I'll find out in the second one, but it's not its own movie. It's half a movie. I saw it twice. The other thing about the movie, I saw it the first time I saw it, I thought maybe there's something wrong with the sound in this theater because I couldn't hear most of the lines in the movie. I literally was straining, like the sound mix was terrible. So I saw it a second time in a better theater, same issue. And then I started looking online and a lot of people were talking about how they had a hard time hearing the movie. And these are just things that like, you gotta take into account as an aspect of the film. If I can't follow along because I can't hear anything that anyone's saying because the sound mix is bad, that's a problem that your movie has. But I also just have a big problem with the way that that movie isn't a complete movie. It's half of a movie. So the half of the movie that I watched was interesting, but by the end of the film, I was like, I have no idea what this is about. I don't know what, like, that. The movie was halfway done, and the movie just ended. And I don't know what we're watching. I don't know what this is, you know? I don't know what, like, the first movie is about stuff. And it has a story that I can follow. The second movie, I'm all right with doing a two-parter, but you gotta like make a film that is its own film. You know, it's a standalone film. And also everything that Marvel made this year, I think that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a TV show that has jumped the shark. It is well past its prime and it needs to just be done. They just need to start over. They just need to just be done. Another one of the worst movies I saw in 2023 is a film called I Told You So. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about this because I don't think anyone's ever going to see it or care about it. I saw it at the Toronto Film Festival, and it was my least favorite film that I saw there. I just found it to be droll and boring and about nothing and kind of lazily put together. Don't worry about it. If you see it coming out, don't bother seeing it. It's an Italian film that you don't need to see. Didn't really like it. It's called I Told You So. Another one of the worst movies I saw in 2023 was The Family Plan with Mark Wahlberg. Watched that with my dad and mom while I was home for the holidays. And, you know, Christmas movies that are made for streaming services aren't usually very good. The Family Plan wasn't necessarily a Christmas movie. It wasn't. But it was awful. It was an awful, you know, family comedy that was released for a streamer. I think it's on Apple Plus, and it was fucking terrible. I don't watch a lot of bad movies. I usually only go to movies if I think that they're going to be good. I watched this one with my parents because my dad wanted to see it, and it was terrible. We all thought it was awful. Okay, this last one on my list for worst movies of 2023. This kind of breaks my heart that this is on my list. And Jeff Talbot, if he's listening, is going to be heartbroken and is going to disagree with me. Asteroid City by my fave, Wes Anderson. I want to be really clear about my feelings about Asteroid City. Okay, everybody? Asteroid City is not a poorly made film. It is very well constructed. It's well written. It's well acted. It has amazing production design. It has all of the elements of an amazing film, of a great film. Why is it on my worst films of 2023 list? I don't actually think it's a bad film. The same way that I don't actually think that like Across the Spider-Verse is like a bad film. I just think that there's things about it that are really disappointing for me and frustrating. And Asteroid City is the same way, where the pieces are all there, but I am just progressively and continually getting very frustrated by the progression in the career of one of my favorite filmmakers. I love Wes Anderson. I'm one of those people. I'm a you know, hipster white guy who likes the whimsical twee aesthetic that Wes coined, and the allusions to old French cinema of the 1960s. But I went and watched Asteroid City, and afterward I sat there and I thought, what am I not liking about these films? What's not working for me about The French Dispatch and Asteroid City and this movie, these shorts that he came out with on Netflix? What is it that hasn't been working for me? And I went back and I watched Darjeeling Limited after I'd seen that, and then I watched The Life Aquatic, and I personally feel that between Rushmore and the Darjeeling Limited, so you have Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums, The Life Aquatic, and the Darjeeling Limited, I think that that's a four movie streak that I would hold that up against any director in the history of cinema, a four movie streak. I think those movies are all just about as good as a movie can possibly be. They're just pitch perfect. They have everything that people love about a Wes Anderson aesthetic, but what they have that's still in there is there's something else. There's this humanity in these characters. There's these very odd, idiosyncratic, really bizarre Wes Andersonian characters, but the actors have the room to breathe and make them their own and really, really create something special with them. There's also there's a dirtiness to those films. Like, the New York that exists in the Royal Tenenbaums is really rough around the edges and dirty. The aesthetic of the Darjeeling Limited is really dirty. Everything in Wes Anderson's movies lately in the last, 5 to 10 years, it's just all a little too perfect and clean, and there's no humanity left in them. It feels like all the humanity and all of the dirtiness in the edges of the frame has been sucked out and stripped out, and all we're left with is perfection. Everything is pristine. Everything is so precise. There's no wiggle room. There's no spontaneity or freedom. He's clamped down too much for my taste, and I find it disappointing that he's gone more in the direction of ultra control instead of more in the direction of exploration. And what else is there to be explored? It seems like he's just decided to make his filmography about how perfect can I get this dollhouse aesthetic that I do, instead of making his stories about what else is there to explore? What else can I do that I haven't done yet? And I don't know. As a fan of the early work, I find myself continually let down by the new pieces that come out. So it's not that if there were no other Wes Anderson movies that had ever existed, and Asteroid City was his first movie, and that came out, I'd probably think it's one of the best things I've ever seen. I'd probably be blown away by the movie. But since I'm such a fan of those early films, I find these later films to be, I get bummed out by them. They just aren't what I want them to be. And Wes Anderson doesn't owe me the kind of film that I want him to make. It's the kind of movies that he wants to make, but they're not really working for me. And since my regard for him is as high as it is, the disappointment puts that movie into my worst list, because I want it to be in my best list, and the fact that it's not just bums me out. Doesn't mean it's a bad movie, though. It's not. Television, best. Succession, the last season, if you saw it, it's a masterpiece. They stuck the landing brilliantly. Everybody killed it. Enough said. The Bear, season 2, amazing. Everything that they did in season 1, they made it even better in season 2. Andor. I'm saying Andor because a lot of this season took place in 2023. It started in 2022, but a lot of it came out in 2023. And if you haven't seen Andor, Star Wars content is another thing, just like Marvel, that I think most of what Star Wars is making these days is bad. Most of what Star Wars is putting out, most Star Wars content, most Star Wars TV shows, most Star Wars movies are bad. It's too much. It's the people making them, the artists behind making them are overworked and underpaid. But Andor was that rare exception. Andor may be the best thing that's ever been made in the Star Wars canon. In my opinion, I really think not only is Andor one of the best Star Wars shows ever made, it's one of the best first seasons of television I've ever seen. It's so impressively written and constructed. Andor blew me away. The Leftovers, dude. Remember when we were all collectively watching The Leftovers and how we all had our fucking guts ripped out by that third episode? I think that the third episode is so good that it almost hurts the rest of the first season, because that episode is so good. But it's also so good that episode alone, if the rest of the show sucked, that episode is so good that it would make this one of the best TV viewing experiences of the year. But The Leftovers was a very, very good first season of television, with one of the best single episodes of television I've ever seen. It absolutely destroyed me. I burst into tears crying as the camera panned to that window and we listened to Linda Ronstadt sing Long, Long Time and the credits rolled. I might cry right now just talking about it. It was incredible. Barry, the final season of Barry. Speaking of sticking a landing in television is one of the hardest things to do. So few shows actually do it in the history of television that, like, you can list them, you know, on a list of like 10. It's like, you know, Breaking Bad did it. People say The Wire did it. I haven't finished The Wire, so I wouldn't know. Succession just did it, and I think Succession was so smart to go out when they went out and not try to extend it another season. And I think Barry was also so smart to end it when they ended it and not try to push it any further. And I think Barry, the ending of Barry blew my mind how good it was, how well they wound up wrapping up that story, and how the last season was the best season of that show. The Leftovers. I said The Leftovers and people said, you mean The Last of Us. That's what I mean. That's a Freudian slip, because The Leftovers is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. Which, if you haven't ever watched The Leftovers, watch The Leftovers. Great TV show. But I did mean The Last of Us. God, I talked about it that entire last section. The Last of Us. Sorry, everyone. The Last of Us. But yeah, Barry, final season, amazing. And the final entry on my best television of 2023 is Jury Duty. If you saw this show, you were just as surprised as the rest of the world was by how well they pulled this off and what a tightrope act it was, what a high wire act it was, and how amazing it is, like how many different things needed to work out and go in their favor for this show to be as successful as it was. And everything was perfect. The casting was perfect, down to the guy, our main guy. They couldn't have gotten luckier with a better guy. He's such a good main character to have. James Marsden is fearless in this show and brilliant. All of the character actors that they found to play the people on the jury are just amazing. It's hard to imagine them being actors because they're so real. Jury Duty, amazing. If you haven't watched it, it's free. It's on Freevee. Go watch it. Hilarious. One of the funniest shows I've seen in a very long time. I was laughing my ass off almost every single episode. It's incredible. Worst, I don't watch bad TV, so I really don't have entries for worst TV. If I start a TV show and I don't like the pilot episode, I just don't watch it. Period. You know? TV is a big investment. I gotta know that I'm getting into something that is good for me to watch it, so I just don't watch it. Music. Oh, God, we're getting there. We're almost done. Music. Best. There was only one album that really dominated my year this year. It dominated my Spotify Wrapped. It was the only album that I listened to on repeat this entire year, and that is The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess by Chapel Roan. Chapel Roan is the future. She absolutely fucking has to be. If people don't get on the Chapel Roan train, I'm going to be pissed, because it's one of the best pop albums I've ever heard. Straight up. Top to bottom, the production, the song construction, the writing, her vocal performance, it's all so, so, so good. If you're a fan of fun, horny, indie girl pop, The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess is just about as good as of an album as you could possibly want from that genre, and it dominated by 2023. There are a few singles that I want to call out, too, that came out in 2023 that I really listened to on repeat. One is The Freedom to Fuck Off by Petey from his album USA. I gotta say, the full album sort of fell a little short for me. I think Petey's earlier album, Lean Into Life, is just about perfect. I think every single track on Lean Into Life is incredible, and the construction of that album is mind-blowingly good, and because of that, USA left me wanting a little bit more. There were several songs that I just felt like weren't as good as I think he's capable of writing, but The Freedom to Fuck Off, which is, I think, his standout song on the album, is an incredible song, and I listened to it probably 20 or 30 times this year. It's a great song. Another song that really like defined this year for me is Friend for Life by X Ambassadors and Medium Build. This song went viral on TikTok first. I feel like this is where it sort of blew up. And then I went and like listened to the studio release, the single on Spotify. And there's something about this like hard hitting rock anthem of two best friends singing about how much they love each other, two guys singing unashamed, like passionately about how much they mean to each other and how much they love each other. The song like makes me cry every time I listen to it. The song is called Friend for Life by X Ambassadors and Medium Build. It's just this like passionate rock and roll anthem of two guys singing about their past together and how much they mean to each other, and it knocks me out every time I listen to it. And the lyrics are like so hyper specific to the experience that I had with a lot of my friends growing up, down to like the lyric getting high off a Sprite can pipe. I'm like, I did that. I got high with my friends off of a pipe that we made out of a soda can. I did that many times. Really great lyrics in that song. And the other single that I want to call out is If I Were a Fish by Karuk and Olivia Barton. This is another song that went viral on the internet and sort of had a moment where it took over the internet. And for, I think that this song worked for content creators and people who are just on the internet in the audience alone, both together. It just spoke to the experience of being on the internet and dealing with strangers being so unthinkably mean to you, but trying to find a positive spin on it. It's one of the like most uplifting and cute and beautiful stories of 2023, is like how big this song got and how the world sort of responded to this song. And it's also just the full song that they wound up releasing on Spotify is incredible. They absolutely knocked it out of the park. And Karuk became one of my favorite songwriters in 2023. Love her music, or their music. I can't remember what pronouns Karuk uses. Fantastic song. Worst music of 2023. Okay. We're getting through the list here. The worst music of 2023. Starting off, we've got the BK jingles. All right. I just like TV, I don't listen to a lot of bad music. I just don't. But every time I'm watching TV and a jingle for Burger King comes up, I want to punch my hand through a wall. I want to not be around anymore. You know what I'm saying? Those jingles hurt me on a soul level. It kills me that that guy's got such a good contract writing jingles, and all he does is goes, BK has a chicken sandwich, and it's got tomato and lettuce, and it's got mayo, and it costs $5.99, and you can get it today at BK. Have it your way. No. Absolutely fuck you. Absolutely fuck you, and fuck BK, and how dare, as a person who writes jingles, I just am so unreasonably mad about the BK jingles. I hate the BK jingles with a fiery passion. every single time they call that guy, they go, "Do you have that new song ready?" And he goes, "Oh shit, yeah, I do. One second." And he puts them on hold and he jumps on the mic and he goes, "BK has a new deal that you can get some chicken nuggets for $6, and they're $6 with and 15 cents with tax depending on the state that you live in at BK." And then he sends that to them, and they're like, "This rules. We're putting this on the air tomorrow." And I fucking hate it. And my other vote for worst music of 2023, and this goes into the category of the way that Asteroid City was on my worst for movies, where it's not worst because it's bad. It's worst because I was so disappointed, and because I hold the artists who make it in such high regard. And people are going to really be mad at me for saying this. People are going to disagree with me, because this was a massive album in 2023. This was an album that defined 2023 for a lot of people, and it was a huge album this year. I just could not get on board with, and I tried, I listened to this album 3 times all the way through. I couldn't get on board with the Boy Genius record. Sorry, everybody. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And that kills me, because individually, I love those artists. I love Phoebe Bridgers. I love Lucy Dacus. And I think Julian Baker's very talented, but I've never really particularly vibed with Julian's solo music. But the Boy Genius record, to me, sounds like leftover songs. When I listen to it, it sounds like songs that couldn't make it on to any of their individual records. That, like, all of them were writing songs for an individual record, and then they were like, whatever leftover songs you have that couldn't make it onto your record, just put that on. Sorry, I gotta send a text here. Just put that on the fucking... I had to send a text because someone just got to my house and I had to let them know they can just come in. Just put that on this record. It just feels like a record full of... I just feel like each one of those songwriters is better than those songs, is capable of writing better songs than the songs that are on that record. And I like them all individually so much, and the record itself just really falls short for me and falls flat. And that's my experience with that record. And I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. But the Boy Genius record fell short for me. Social media, best and worst. We got 2 more categories, okay? 2 more categories. Social media, best and worst. Lily, you can come in here if you want, or you can hang out there. I'm doing the podcast still. Okay. I'm doing the podcast still. It might be kind of hot in here too, because I have like the lights going. And what's up? How's it going?
I'm tired, but I'm good.
Oh man, my friend Lily just got here, everybody. People in the comments just said hello, Lily. This is a first. I don't think I've ever, while I've been recording the podcast, had someone come in to the apartment. But we're so close. Social media, best and worst. These are like my favorite content creators. These are like the people that I was really fucking with and rocking with in 2023. Starting out, Sid and Olivia, okay? Sid and Olivia have been on my podcast before, and they've been my faves for several years now, but I felt like in 2023, what I was impressed with about Sid and Olivia is they didn't, like, they've been making sketches together for years and years and years, and they just keep going, and they just keep rocking, and they just keep being good, and they just keep being so funny. And so I was really impressed with Sid and Olivia this year with the, like, just the continued brilliance that, like, they don't seem to hit a wall. They don't seem to run out of gas. Loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. So many people are saying hi, Lily, in the comments right now. You're very popular in the comments right now. So shout out to Sid and Olivia for rocking. Another comedy troupe that I found this year that gave me a lot of comedic relief and made me laugh a lot is That's a Bad Idea. I got most of their videos on Instagram. You might follow these guys. It's That's a Bad Idea with a period in between each word. That's period, a period, bad period, idea. And they're a comedy duo. It's primarily two guys, but they have a lot of people that come in and contribute. And I thought that their stuff was high quality production value. And what really works about That's a Bad Idea is the performances. They both are really funny performers. And sometimes the performances are a little bit better than the writing maybe, but it's okay because the performances are solid, are like really, really, really funny. Really enjoyed watching those guys this year. I feel like they had a really big year with a lot of growth. I feel like they were a lot more noticed by everyone this year. They were one of the big channels in my sphere, and it seemed to be that they were growing a lot. This year, a content creator that I've been following for several years, who I've been a fan of for several years, I feel like really blew up and became like a lot of people's faves, and it was really cool to watch, and that is Veronica Is Cool. If you follow Veronica Is Cool, homegirl did something this year that I've been like thinking about doing and wanting to do, but not had the guts to try to execute. And I feel like this is something that me and Kara and Colin talk about. This is something that a lot of my content creator friends and I talk about, is wanting to make content that has continuity and has through line and has like a storyline that if you're paying attention, you can follow the continuity of like the friendships and the drama that's going on between the people who appear regularly in these little 1 to 2 minute long sketches. And Veronica did this thing this year where like each individual video, her style is so chaotic and bizarre. And it's usually just Veronica trying to be funny and her friends filming her and not being impressed with her attempts to be funny and Veronica being very like awkward. But this year there was this whole storyline between Veronica and her roommate Kyle, who she sort of secretly has a crush on and is in love with, and she's always trying to make Kyle laugh and be impressed by her, and Kyle's just like never impressed by her. But it became this thing where like between Veronica and Kyle and the audience, there was this storyline going on where people were commenting on the love story between Veronica and Kyle and like whether or not it would come to fruition and whether or not Veronica and Kyle were ever going to actually, like if Kyle was ever going to actually admit that he really loves Veronica. So like Kyle would be in a video where he'd be like really annoyed by Veronica, but everyone in the audience would be like, when he said that one thing, that was boyfriend behavior. Like Kyle definitely loves Veronica. And Veronica's very like aware that this is going on. So she's making this meta narrative with her like funny little videos about what's going on behind the scenes, the drama that's going on with her and Kyle. And it was so like well crafted that it even culminated in, spoiler alert, this just came out today, her New Year's Eve episode where she finally kisses Kyle. Veronica and Kyle kissed, and the audience reaction was golden. Everyone in the audience was like, I gasped when she kissed him. When she walked up to him and kissed him, I gasped. Like people were like, they kissed. And it's a really funny video. It's a very typically Veronica video where she's like drunk and she's sort of like kissing Kyle in a way that he doesn't want to be kissed. But they do kiss. And it was one of the best storylines in, you know, short form content of the year, in my opinion. The budding love story between Veronica and her roommate Kyle. So good on you, Veronica, for crafting something really, really unique and weird and interesting and hilarious all year long. Another one of my favorite pages this year was Andy Arthur Smith. This is a guy who's been around for a few years, but I feel like in 2023 really hit his stride. The reason I'm impressed with this channel is I don't typically like channels that sort of do one thing over and over and over again. I tend to get bored if you have like one shtick that you do over and over and over again. Andy Smith has a thing that he does, and every time I watch it, I'm impressed. It's a weird magic trick that he's been able to pull off, that it doesn't matter how many times I watch him doing the same thing, I'm impressed every time. And if you know this guy, what he does is he does a cappella arrangements to like either like famous movie soundtracks or famous songs, but he does it in a way where it's like people at a party hanging out and then they all decide to like do an a cappella arrangement of some famous, you know, commercial jingle or a song from a movie. But his specificity of rhythm and pitch and how amazingly impressive his pitch control and vocal dexterity is, it blows my mind every single time. Every single time I watch one of his videos, I stop and I watch and I marvel at how impressive his control over his voice is. He can do any, and he, and his, like, his memory for notes, he'll do songs that have like insane guitar licks and he'll sing every single note of the guitar lick and not miss a single note. And every time he does it, I'm impressed every single fucking time. So Andy Arthur Smith has managed to have a channel where he does one thing over and over again and continually impress me with it. My last favorite thing from social media this year was Lachlan and Jackson Fairbairn. If you follow Lachlan and Jackson, they each have their own page, Jackson Fairbairn and Lachlan Fairbairn. They're two brothers from Australia who just do sketches with each other, and they're just fucking hilarious. And I love Lachlan and Jackson, and it's really just straightforward stuff, but I always feel like the writing and the performance is always pitch perfect. Their rhythm with each other is outstanding. I'm never mad that I watch a Lachlan and Jackson Fairbairn video. Their brand of humor feels very unique and specific to them. It's a rhythm and a style that feels very like their own, and that's always really impressive. So kudos to all of those people. Worst social media thing, this isn't like a worst channel or anything like that, is just the whole Twitter X threads of it all. The whole just sort of dissolution and demise of whatever the fuck is going on over at the app formerly known as Twitter, and even Threads. I think for a little bit there, we thought we had something going with Threads, that we had like the anti-Twitter where like we could, I don't know, have like a supportive, fun community, but Threads really quickly got maybe even uglier than Twitter. Like really, really quickly, Threads just got flooded with like, once all the people on Twitter who were paying for blue check marks realized that a lot of people weren't there anymore to farm outrage from, they moved over to Threads, and it's all just bad now. Twitter's never been particularly like a healthy space in social media, but I just think all of the continued decisions from Elon Musk that are just the head-scratchingly stupidity of it all those were both two places that I really didn't know what to do with in 2023. I mean, and I even think when Threads started out and everyone was just sort of being cute, like, hey, are we posting Threads? Are we here? Are we Threadsing? Is everyone Threadsing? That was like cute content, but it was also like, what are we doing? Is this real? Are we actually going to use this as a real platform? Or are we just going to sort of like joke about how this is Twitter, but not Twitter? What is it? And now that it is a real thing, it's become a terrible place. Marley Sage Gable says, that's not been my experience with Threads at all, in all caps. Maybe I'm wrong. That's been my experience. My experience was, Lily says she never even made one. So, you know, some people are still not there. That's true. That's very true. Okay. Last topic. We went middle of the show, we did the bad stuff, and then we went kind of light stuff with movies and music and TV and social media. Now we're going to get back into some a little bit ugly territory, but we'll close off with a nice note, I think. Politics, best and worst. We'll make this quick. This is a little bit of recency bias, but like George Santos getting booted from Congress, best. That's fun. That's fun, right? That's cool. That's a fun thing. Trump being off the ballot in multiple states, best. That's fun, right? That's a fun new precedent. That's a cool thing to be like, no, actually, when you try to commit insurrection, that the Constitution says you can't run for president after that. You can't be on a presidential ballot. So that was kind of fun to actually see, like, consequences. And in the vein of actually seeing some consequences beginning to brew for Trump, the indictments, I would say, throughout the year were really fun things. Just all the indictments. All the many, many, many indictments. So those were sort of the political highlights. There weren't many, but I'd say that a lot of it was just like Schadenfreude based, of just like sort of watching conservatives get owned over and over again in 2023. And the worst of politics, and I know that I've already talked about this, but we'll just bring it back, is the genocide and America's continued support and unwillingness to call for a ceasefire, regardless of political party or affiliation, whether it's the Democrats or Republicans. America's, you know, position of international diplomacy to be decidedly pro-Israel and to support Israel no matter what, and to refuse to put any kind of pressure on Israel to just be a little more humane and back off maybe a little bit. That's been the worst. And especially heading into a crucial election year, it's been pretty shitty to be like, ah, fuck, we might hand the reins over to authoritarian Christo-fascism because the Democrats can't show any backbone in the face of genocide and one of the worst humanitarian crises we've seen in a very long time. So that was definitely the low point of being politically active in 2023, I would say. This is a bonus round, and then we're done. All right, Lily's here, and I gotta get out of here. All right, this has been going on for too long. Bonus round, and then we're done. And the bonus round is things that I'm really late on that I discovered in 2023. Things that I'm just so late on. These are not things that happened in 2023. These are just things that I found in 2023. And this was so recent. And this is my recency bias showing up again. I watched the movie The Iron Claw, and in that movie, the song that the brothers come into the ring on is Tom Sawyer by Rush. And I've heard that song before a million times in a million different movies and commercials, you know. Monday night and day, me dad, today's Tom Sawyer, me rad. Don't don't ba bow. You've heard that song a million times. It's needle dropped in so many different movies. But I listened to it. I was like, I gotta go listen to that song. I gotta put that on in the car and let it rip. So I did that, and I was like, man, this song rips. And the drumming for Rush rips. And then I just started listening to Rush, and I listened to like 30 Rush songs on my way from Salt Lake back to LA after the holidays. And I had my mind blown by the musical genius of Rush. And so I'm way late on Rush, but hey, Canada and my Canadian friends, good job on Rush. Good job, everybody in Canada. Rush is very good. And my favorite Rush song right now is Spirit of the Radio. The last minute and a half of Spirit of the Radio by Rush is my favorite thing in a song that I've heard in 2023. It's my favorite thing that I've heard in a song in a very long time. It blew my fucking mind, and I listened to it like four times in a row. The first time I heard it, I was like, what the fuck just happened at the end of this song? It goes so hard. If you have not listened to Spirit of the Radio by Rush ever before, go listen to it right now. And if you haven't listened to it in a while, go listen to it right now and wait for the last minute and a half of the song, and then just have your brain melted by the last minute and a half of how hard the last minute and a half of that song goes. Mind-blowing. And the other thing that I discovered after I was listening to Rush, I was listening to so much Rush that Spotify was like, do you just want to listen to like a bunch of 80s rock? And I was like, sure, Spotify. And they put on some Cars, and like Just What I Needed by the Cars came on, and I was like, god damn, this song rips. This song's so good. So I started listening to the Cars, and I was like, how did I not know that the Cars have so many hits, and also that the Cars were the Killers before the Killers were the Killers? How did I not know that? Because the Killers are my favorite band, and I didn't know that the Cars are the Killers just in the 80s. And so now the Cars might be one of my favorite bands, because I realized like how much Brandon Flowers was just doing an impression of the lead singer of the Cars. So Rush and the Cars, I'm late to the party, but I'm happy to be excited about that. And I'm excited about how much I get to just listen to The Cars now and Rush and Spirit of the Radio by Rush and be like an old guy listening to classic rock. Very excited to carry that energy into 2024. And that's it. That's my list. We did it. Oh my God. We did it. We did it, everybody. Thanks for being here with me in 2023. Appreciate the support. Appreciate all of you who continue to listen to this podcast, continue to show up in the comments and engage with this thing. Thank you. Thank you for listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, if you're out there. Thank you. Thank you for your support. Really, really appreciate it. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. And you can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, or by just searching Austin Archer wherever you stream music. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. My Patreon patrons, thank you for an amazing 2023. Thank you so much for being here with me throughout the year. And if you want to get in this production team for 2024 and let's keep the boat rolling, consider going over there. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. We'd love to have you on the team. The people who are on the team already, I love you so much. You're the best people in the world. You're my babies and you're so generous. And I love you, genuinely, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for your generosity. And the record, go check out the record. The record, you can get it at the link in my bio on all of my social medias. The vinyl, the double vinyl is out. I'll mail it to you. If you want, you can put in the notes when you buy it that you want me to sign it. I'll write you a little note and I'll sign it for you. Only if you want, but I will. Go pick one up. Start your 2024 off right. Okay, that's it. That's it. Thank you for being here. Wish you all health and love and light and good things in 2024 and success and abundance. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Until next time. Bye-bye. I'm